Welcome to the podcast of Focus 580, featuring interviews with newsmakers and experts on international affairs and daily life, hosted by David Inge at WILL Radio, Urbana, Illinois. Please support this service by becoming a member and visit us on the web at will.uiuc.edu.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is the second hour of the program. It's our morning talk show. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the program, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Jason Croft, is at the controls this morning. Well, in this second hour of the program, we have as our guest Mark Morial. He is the president and CEO of the National Urban League, and he has had that post since 2003. He will be visiting the campus of the University of Illinois tomorrow. He'll be giving the keynote address for this year's Martin Luther King Jr. celebration. Every year now, at least for a number of years, in January, there have been a number of events designed to honor the memory and the contributions of Dr. King and talk about issues involving civil rights. And he will be talking at 7 o'clock in Smith Music Hall on Matthews Avenue on campus. And this is an event that is free and open to the public, so anybody who is interested in hearing what he has to say certainly should feel welcome. Among other things, he is going to be talking about the rebuilding of the city of New Orleans in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. But also, I think he wants to talk about, and here on the program, we want to talk about the idea of civic engagement in a little bit larger sense. And maybe the case of New Orleans is something that we can take as a kind of a case study. Let me tell you just a little bit more about him. He, in fact, grew up in New Orleans, and before becoming president of the National Urban League, he served two terms as the mayor of New Orleans. This was from 1994 until 2002. He also served 2 years in the Louisiana State Senate, and before that, practiced law. He has a law degree from the Georgetown University Law Center. He's joining us this morning by telephone, and as we talk, of course, questions, comments from people who are listening are welcome. All you have to do to be involved in the conversation is to pick up the telephone and dial the number. And that number here in Champaign-Urbana is 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that is good anywhere that you can hear us. That is 800-222-9455. So again, for people who are here where we are, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Mr. Morial, hello.
I'm glad to be with you. Good morning, and good morning to your listening audience.
Well, we certainly appreciate you giving us some of your time. I took a look at the text of a speech that you gave just a couple of weeks ago in New Orleans, where you were outlining some of your ideas for the rebuilding of the city. And this is something I know that you have actually been talking about now for at least a few months, and you've testified before Congress. And so these are some ideas that you had been putting out there for a while. There was something, one of the things that you said in the speech particularly struck me, where you were talking about the fact that when it comes to what happened in New Orleans, there is, in this country, I think, genuinely a shared sense of pain and suffering. I think a lot of people really have felt for the people of New Orleans. And then you go on to suggest that perhaps as we in future, as we look back on the recovery effort, you're saying that either there will be a shared sense of victory or there will be a shared sense of defeat, depending upon how things go, which makes me wonder is whether you think that the degree of success or lack of success in New Orleans will in some sense reflect on all of America. Do you think that, in fact, this is a test for not just for the people of the Gulf Coast, but for the people of the United States?
I think it will be a test, and here's why. And many have said, why should I be concerned? Chicago, 1871. San Francisco, 1906. New York, 9/11, 2001. Examples of three great American cities that were beset by awful tragedies, a fire in Chicago, an earthquake in San Francisco, a terrorist attack on New York, and now a hurricane, not only affecting New Orleans, but an entire region of southeastern Louisiana and southern Mississippi. And I think a great nation like ours, that has rebuilt other cities, that's performed feats abroad, has responded to crises abroad, now engaged in rebuilding of foreign countries, whether it's Iraq or Kosovo or Western Europe after World War II, must demonstrate that it can muster the money, the will, the coordination and managerial skills to rebuild an important section of the nation. And I think that's the long-term test. Katrina was an awful tragedy, an equal opportunity destroyer. It damaged, of course, my hometown, one of America's great cities, one of the world's great cities. But beyond that, smaller communities that may not be in, on the tip of people's tongues, like St. Bernard Parish, Louisiana, Plaquemines Parish, Louisiana, Long Beach, Mississippi, Waveland, Mississippi, Gulfport, Mississippi, Biloxi, Mississippi, Bay St. Louis, Mississippi, Slidell, Louisiana. These communities, an area of destruction far greater than anything we've experienced in American history. So I think the people of the United States and many of the institutions have responded with money. They've responded with great concern. They've responded with a great sense of compassion. But the work and the actions of government, state, federal, and local, have left much to be desired, and I think as we move forward from this point, the question is there going to be a success at the rebuilding when we look back at this 3 to 5 years from now? It is a long process. It is a difficult process, and I think the National Urban League sees our work in this area and our voice in this area as being consistent with our commitment to economic empowerment, our commitment to civic engagement, our commitment to being about America's urban communities and the people who live in them. And we, in October, outlined what we call the Katrina Bill of Rights, which really we think is how the nation, how we should look at whether the rebuilding is successful around the rights of the victims. I mean, we had a displacement in this case of better than 500,000, maybe as close as many as 1 million people who were displaced from their homes, who were evacuated. A good portion of them have been unable to return as of yet. Some people have not seen their homes. We had, I think, in both states, there may have been as many as 2,000, close to 2,000 deaths. So the level of this tragedy is going to require continuous engagement by this nation. And I think Katrina has a practical importance in the lexicon of the United States, but it's also going to have symbolic importance. This is going to be in the history books because of the nature of the catastrophe, because of the destruction. But I think for this nation, it's a test of our will. It's a test of our desire. The fact is that New Orleans and Louisiana cannot rebuild on their own. They cannot. The people have great resolve to rebuild. There's great controversy over the rebuilding plans, but it's going to take the nation to help it happen.
Yeah. As you say, there is a lot of controversy about the rebuilding plans and people asking some difficult and fundamental questions about how the city will be rebuilt. Should it be rebuilt as it was? Does it make sense for people to be living in the parts of the city that are below sea level? Is it possible to build some kind of system that will protect that? All of that really goes to this question what will the city of New Orleans be in the future? Will it be like the city it was in the past? And will it be possible, assuming that all of those people who left would want to come back, would it really be possible for them to come back?
Let me share one very important thought that I think that's been missed.
Mm-hmm.
All of the city of New Orleans is below sea level. Every single solitary square foot of the city is below sea level. All of southeastern Louisiana, for the most part, south of Lake Pontchartrain, is below sea level. The issue is simply the degree to which it's below sea level. In New Orleans, there's some areas that may be 2, 3, 4 feet below sea level, and there are other areas that are 12 feet below sea level. And I've emphasized that because some of the rebuilding plans, and some of the discussion about rebuilding assumes that some areas are below sea level and some are not, when the entire community is below sea level. And if you look at the last 50 years or so, you're hard-pressed to find a section of the city which has not on one occasion or another suffered some form of flooding, either from a serious rain event, a tropical storm, or a hurricane. Katrina simply trumped, in terms of degree and in terms of size, the amount of flooding that takes place, which is why I think that it's pretty much the considered view of most people that the first important step for the government to make for New Orleans and for the region is to build a first-class flood control system that provides maximum protection. And I emphasize the region because the city is in a bowl and the region is in a bowl. And when we speak about the city goes beyond, the tentacles of the legal city. It goes to an entire region. The other thing I would want to add on this measure is that as we speak today, there are hundreds of thousands of people from the region still living, still residing in, could very well be your community. I know in Atlanta, I know in Houston, Dallas, Memphis, Baton Rouge, Lafayette, Jackson, Mississippi, Philadelphia, just to name a few, Washington, D.C., where people who are, so to a great extent, if people are not afforded an opportunity to return, then communities around the nation are going to have to absorb a lot of new residents. So there's an interconnection and an interrelatedness of this very important issue. As to the plan that's been proposed by a rebuilding commission down there, we've been fairly strong in saying that the plan that's been initially proposed is woefully inadequate. And I think that across the board, there's been great criticism of the plan, because what the plan does is it sort of has as its vision a much, much smaller New Orleans, and it in effect creates a redlining effect around many neighborhoods in the city. Obviously, for many people who own houses, property, and businesses in those areas that would be redlined, they're appalled and offended at the plan. But secondly, many of the economic and business interests in the city who've had difficulty getting their businesses back on their feet, the hospitality industry, for one example, the fundamental reason has to do with the fact that their workers have no place to live. So if you, in effect, agree with a vision, which I think is a wrong-headed vision, to shrink the size of the city, you're going to change the character of the city dramatically, and you could hamstring many of the city's major industries, because there just will not be the workers there to sustain, for example, a hospitality industry where there may be as many as 25,000, 30,000 workers, the port, the oil and gas industry. So there are broad economic repercussions. I believe that the right for each citizen to return should be preserved. And what does that mean? I think that the decision on whether people return should be with them. And I think that this is a fundamental, in this case, American right, because we're talking about people whose homes, whose lives, whose schools, whose places of worship, whose jobs were in this community. And I think it is basically, it's axiomatic that after a great American tragedy with so many deaths and so much loss of property, that people's rights to return and their right to make that decision on their own and the government's obligation to assist and help needs to be fundamentally preserved as we approach the rebuilding of the Gulf Coast.
We have as our guest in this part of Focus 580, Mark Morial. He's president and CEO of the National Urban League, has been since May of 2003. Before that, he served two terms as the mayor of New Orleans, and he grew up there in New Orleans. He also served.
And I wanted to add,
yes, sir.
Yeah, that I'm very excited about coming to Champaign-Urbana tomorrow, and I'm very, very excited to be there with the folks at the university, but also the folks at the Urban League affiliate in Champaign-Urbana, headed by Tracy Parsons. They're doing some very important work there. They've got a new initiative called the Center for Civic Engagement and Social Justice. I'll be there to not only speak, but also to support their work in civic engagement, in education, in economic empowerment. And the Urban League is a national organization, in reality a national network of over 100 affiliates who serve collectively more than 2.1 million Americans in a wide variety of areas. So I am just certainly thankful for those in the community that have supported our affiliate, and I'm looking forward to certainly giving support to their work to create this new center for civic engagement and social justice.
Well, I think that that is an important point, something for people to understand, and I'm sure that the folks here who are involved with the Urban League appreciate that, but that it's something that people really need to understand, that yes, there is this national organization, which you had, but the important thing about the Urban League, it is, as you say, it is a network of community organizations, people who are working to do things right there in their own community, as there is one here in Champaign County.
And it'll be my first visit to Champaign County and my first visit to that part of Illinois, and I'm really looking forward to it. One of the important parts of my job is I do get an opportunity to visit so many communities and to get a great sense of the work that's going on at the local level, because in truth and in fact, this is where people's deepest affections and deepest commitments are. Is at the local level, and our affiliate in Champaign County, like so many of our affiliates, tries very hard to bring people together from a variety of walks of life to do good work as a not-for-profit organization.
Well, perhaps I should mention again, for people who might not have been listening at the beginning, that our guest, Mark Morial, president of the National Urban League, will be giving a talk here on the U of I campus tomorrow. This is the keynote address for the events all surrounding the celebration of the birth of Martin Luther King, and he'll be talking at 7 o'clock in the Smith Music Hall. That's on Matthews Avenue on the campus tomorrow night. It is free and open to the public. Anyone who is interested in attending can do that, and he'll be talking about this sort of issue that we've touched on this morning, that is the importance of civic engagement, people being involved in their communities. And I'm sure you'll make some references to New Orleans. But,
oh, certainly.
It goes beyond that.
Oh, yeah, it does. And yeah. It goes far beyond New Orleans. And one of the interesting things I think people have to give consideration to is that the entire coastal part of the United States, I guess you could say from Texas around Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Florida, South Carolina, North Carolina, going up, are in what I would call the hurricane belt. I mean, these parts of the United States, particularly people that live close to water, are always at great risk during hurricane season, always at great risk when there's a major storm brewing out in the Gulf of Mexico and in the Atlantic. And one of the things I've observed is that the number, the frequency, the intensity of these storms is increasing, and that is why state and local governments, the federal government and FEMA have to, if you will, retool and re-engineer how we prepare for and how we respond to major weather events. I mean, Katrina exposed so many deficiencies, inefficiencies, and failures, and it hurt people, and it cost lives, and we... That aspect of this doesn't need to be swept under the rug. My view, though, is it's easy to vilify all of these failures. It's another thing for us to muster up as a nation and as governmental agencies the sort of lessons learned edict. What do you learn and what changes are you going to make as a result of that? I mean, one of the things I've been disappointed at is that the Congress didn't have the fortitude to create an independent commission like the 9/11 commission to really examine all of the things that went wrong. Now, Congress held some very important hearings, and they continue to hold some very important hearings, but there were congressional hearings post 9/11. I believe that an independent commission could help, because I think underneath all of this, there's a great need to retool the nation's emergency preparedness and emergency response systems.
Let's talk with some people who are listening here. We'll start with someone who is over in Indiana and line one. Hello.
Hello. I have to say a very clear enunciation of the problems in New Orleans. It sort of lays it out on the table to me very succinctly. I would thank you just for that. I've heard a lot of things on a lot of news, and yours was extremely clear and well taken and to the point. I guess I got a couple of things. One, I don't think this is in the area of vilification, but it might be. I think it was Molly Ivers, but anybody, some pundit talked about, well, what do you expect from a government that is run by people who don't believe in government? I wonder if you could speak to that in a general way.
Well,
and secondly, it seems to me this is, you know, you may well already know this or known it for years, but the Urban League seems to be something that needs to be really enlarged, and not only because of the hurricanes, but just for the infrastructure of our cities are, you know, just crumbling away because and basically the pulling out the governmental doles and things to different parts of the country to help them, you know, get their infrastructure up and running. The communication thing, when it came out of the Katrina thing, and I know a lot about that, was just appalling. It just amazed me that, you know, people are running around, were standing next to each other, and they couldn't communicate except, you know, verbally 4 feet away because their handhelds weren't in the same frequency as the others. It's just, it's crazy. You know, NASCAR even got that better set up than the government. Thanks a lot.
I think the caller makes some good points, and it was appalling to me that in a post 9/11 world, that the emergency responders couldn't communicate with each other better. I mean, immediately after Katrina, when the phone lines went down and some of the cell towers went down, there was complete paralysis. Although most of the national media, CNN, CBS, ABC, NBC, were able to continuously broadcast and continuously, and it is because they had the appropriate equipment, backup generators, satellite phones, all of the things needed. When emergency responders didn't have that, nor did it seem that they could focus on the need for that fairly immediately, because the military certainly has ample supplies of that type of equipment, I would say that. I think the second broader thing about FEMA, and I had an opportunity to work with FEMA in the 1990s on Hurricane George's when James Lee Witt was the head of FEMA on a number of issues, and I found in those days the agency to be highly professional. Somewhere along the line, because of maybe leadership or de-emphasis, they were just ill-equipped to handle this. They were slow on the take in terms of mobilizing resources. The bigger question is what is being done to fix that, because there's another hurricane season that's going to begin in June of this year. And my concern, when I served as mayor, we always had, in effect, a May exercise, a review of our emergency preparedness systems and resources that took place in an effort to really be prepared. And we tried to begin preparing people, and I think people in the Gulf Coast are extremely hurricane savvy, but rely greatly upon information and the ability of local, state, and the feds to be able to respond. So the real issue for us is that there needs to be pressure and being placed on the federal government to improve and do the things that are necessary now. There's no time for bureaucratic analyses and studies because hurricane season, we don't control it. You can't delay it. You can't push it off. You can't say, well, why won't hurricane season wait 90 days until we're ready? It comes every year, and if history proves itself, we've just had more frequent and more intense hurricanes over the last few years than I think the nation has had in a long time.
Let's talk with another caller here. This is someone in Urbana, line number two. Hello.
Yeah, I'm going to have to ask a question and then hang up. But I was wondering if you'd take a stab at this kind of loaded question, which is, do you think that what you're requesting for New Orleans in any sense dips into the areas of exceptionalism and special treatment, or do you think that, if anything, the exceptionalism and special treatment is negative and it's in the way that things have gone so far? And I'll hang up. Thanks.
I think it's a good two things, because some have said, why should New Orleans, why should the region receive, quote-unquote, this, that, or the other? I'd say two things. One, when the towers fell in New York City in 2001, there was very little hesitation to appropriate the money to do the things necessary in an effort to help New York City get through what, in fact, occurred. You'd have to go back and look at the amount of money that was spent all told. I know that the Victims Compensation Fund cost the government, I think, in the neighborhood of $7 to $10 billion. And what FEMA spent to clean up the site, assist people, I really don't know. There was never any objection raised, never anyone who raised the deficit or special treatment or anything of that sort. And I think in doing that, the nation set a high standard, and that is when one of our own is the victim of an event and an occurrence beyond its control, a local city in the case of New York, in the case of New Orleans and the Gulf Coast region, we are not going to spare any expense in an effort to help them come back, help them heal. That's, I think, the most important point. The second point is, I think, if Seattle or Los Angeles, you know, God forbid, had an earthquake event or there was some catastrophic snowstorm in the Northeast that caused untold damage, I think that the people of the nation would want its government and would want on their own to do everything possible to bring that part of the country back. I think the third thing is that the Gulf Coast has an importance to all of the nation. You all have a strong agricultural sector in Illinois, in places like Iowa and Kansas. Much of the grain and wheat and corn, which is grown in those areas that is destined for Latin America or Asia, goes through the Port of New Orleans. Same thing with coal. Many of the finished goods that find their way to markets in the Midwest and the Mideast come through the Port of New Orleans. So much of the offshore drilling that produces energy for the country comes from the Gulf Coast. So much of the fishing. New Orleans has, and the region has an importance to the nation, a broader economic importance, so its recovery also has practical economic benefits for most of the nation. And I think the leaders of the city and the state, the current leaders of the city and the state, I don't think have done the kind of job articulating that point to the nation. This is not just about help us out because we're down. Yes, it's a little bit. It's about that because these are our fellow citizens. But it's also about the value of the region from an economic standpoint to the nation at large.
We are a little bit past the midpoint here. We have some other callers. I do also want to introduce again our guest for anybody who might have tuned in here in the last 10 minutes maybe. We're talking with Mark Morial. He's the president and CEO of the National Urban League, has had that job since 2003. Before that, he served two terms as the mayor of New Orleans from 94 to 2002. He also served 2 years in the Louisiana State Senate, and before that, he was a private practice attorney in one of the Gulf South's leading law firms. His father was also mayor of New Orleans, so he grew up in Gulf Coast politics, and he's going to be here on the U of I campus to talk about some of these very issues. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, he'll be talking at the Smith Hall on Matthews Avenue on campus. It's free and open to the public, and anybody who is interested, anybody in and around Champaign-Urbana should certainly feel welcome to go and hear him speak. Questions here, welcome to 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And we have some other folks here. Next is someone who is on a cell phone here in our area in Champaign. This is line number 3. Hello.
President Morial, nice to talk to you.
Hi, sir.
What's your take on the current unwillingness of the Bush administration, and I read this article on the front page of the New York Times a few minutes ago, to cooperate with Senators Collins and Lieberman in their investigation concerning what the government knew and did not know and how did it react to it pre-Hurricane Katrina.
I think that the administration should fully cooperate with an independent investigation, and I don't think anyone should see it as a threat or as a as anything other than the obligation of the Congress to get to the bottom of what happened. Look, one, no one can disagree with the fact that many, many things went wrong. No one, and while FEMA and the federal government's pointing fingers at the governor and the mayor, and the mayor and the governor are pointing fingers at the federal government, you know, something that says that when all these folks start pointing fingers at each other, then they must all be at fault. And I think that's what the case is. And I think the Congress should continue to persist. I mean, I've strongly, from the very beginning, supported the idea of an independent investigation, and I think the Collins-Lieberman Committee, which I've appeared before, is doing its very important work, and they just need to continue to press forward to get to the bottom of it so that lessons can be learned, and they ought to do it. And the public needs to focus on the fact that simply because there's opposition to some sort of investigation, that's not going to make it go away. This issue is just not going to go away.
Quick question. Dr. Cornel West, a distinguished African-American professor at Princeton, wrote a famous book, Race Matters. Does race matter in Hurricane Katrina response?
I believe that with Hurricane Katrina, a combination of race, class, and region. And it and people say, well, what do you mean? I think that there was a sense, a permeating sense, and it's kind of hard maybe for someone to kind of look, find a smoking gun in this, that if a person could not evacuate, then we, quote the government, have no obligation to them, when in fact many of the people who cannot evacuate were mostly poor people and mostly older people. And in New Orleans, it just so happens that a substantial portion of the people who are poor happen to be African-American. But I emphasize region and I emphasize class because while the press hasn't reported it significantly, there were many, many people who were white, who were Asian, who lived in places like New Orleans East and St. Bernard Parish and Plaquemines Parish, who found themselves stranded in nursing homes and in their homes and unable to get out. So I prefer, and I think that that region, I think the South has found itself at the bottom of the list and at the bottom of the heap in so many cases when it comes to the emphasis that we place on it. And so I think it's a combination of factors. And I think it's very difficult for anyone to deny it. Now, let me contextualize. I want to say this because when I say this, people say, well, who are you calling somebody a racist? I don't think that's what this is about. The issue is what was the effect of what people may have done? Was it a factor? And I don't think anyone can deny that somehow race, somehow class, somehow region were a factor in what has occurred.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks for the call. Given that, having said, as you said, and I think a lot of other people feel that mistakes were made in the response on all levels of government, national, state, local. But for yourself, speaking as a former mayor of New Orleans, were there specific things that happened on the municipal level that you saw that personally disappointed you?
There were two immediate things. I mean, one was I think that there was a slowness in ordering an evacuation. And I only know that when we did an evacuation in 1998, we did it 48 hours before the hurricane hit. And I think when you're presented with the prospect of a major hurricane, there can be no delay. And when I say no delay, it's a judgment that has to be made because you've determined that if you ever face the fact that a major hurricane, a 3 or 4 or 5, is going to dead center the city of New Orleans or the region, you have no alternative but to order an evacuation. I think the second thing is that I was surprised and disappointed and frankly angered at the confusion that took place at the Dome and at the convention centers, which are used as shelters of last resort, meaning that there was no security there, there was no staffing and personnel, there appeared to be no medical personnel there in any organized fashion, there was inadequate water, there was no food, there were no supplies, people were told to go there, and there was nothing there. And shelters of last resort are always going to be uncomfortable and they're going to be difficult, but there's an obligation there. I think I was, that angered me and that surprised me. And then I think the third thing was that there seemed to be no coordinated command operation, no coordinated communications in terms of what in fact was occurring that Monday, that Tuesday, that Wednesday, that Thursday. You saw no spokesperson on behalf of the city. You saw no solid information coming out. There was not a clear sense. It just kind of seemed to circulate. So there's so many things. I think out of this, for the municipal government and then for the state government, which are designed to work together, and also FEMA, which has which has access to the most significant resources, rescue and that sort of thing, there's got to be at some place where someone is going to say, here are the lessons we learned. Here is what we think went wrong. Here are the things we have to correct. They all owe an obligation to the people of the nation to say that we've learned from this and we're going to take steps to make sure that this is not going to happen again anywhere in the United States. And I think that's important. And I emphasize again from the standpoint of the Urban League that what the Urban League has done in community after community across the nation since Katrina, I think as many as 30 communities where we have local community-based organizations, is we have supported the displaced New Orleanian, the displaced Mississippian, the displaced Gulf Coast resident who showed up maybe in Champaign-Urbana or in Chicago or in Detroit or in Buffalo, needing a place to connect with temporary housing, connect with maybe a job opportunity on a temporary basis. We've been that ally, that home away from home, that resource away from home. And I'm really proud of the work that the Urban League and its affiliates have done, as well as so many churches and other community-based groups, people who gave money to the relief agencies. I mean, that's been the caring and concern from the average American has truly been one of the most important parts of this. And I don't think it should ever go unsaid that so many people have done so much. I mean, I'm familiar with people here in New York City who took in strangers for several days into their homes, churches who set up temporary quarters in their basement in order to help people, people who fed people. There's just been a whole range of help and support, and that's been the positive part of this, and probably the strength of this, notwithstanding many of the fumbles that may have occurred at the governmental level. And I think that if someone's listening and they work inside these agencies, I mean, you know, it's not an indictment of individuals who've tried. It's that the system and the leadership of the system was woefully inadequate in the case of Katrina, and it doesn't make any sense for anyone to try to defend it.
Well, let us talk with some other people who are listening, and we'll go next to nearby community Belgium. This is line number 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to get back to the original premise we were talking about here, and that is New Orleans the same as San Francisco, Chicago, New York? No, it's not. It's a much, 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 much larger problem. And the problem goes way beyond building dikes and those sort of things. It goes to the point that the major industry that's in Louisiana is the petrochemical industry, and we are belching out a lot of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, and this problem's only going to get worse and worse and worse. Our problem starts there to solve your problem in New Orleans.
I think one point the caller's making, and I do think this is that the global warming issue as a component of sort of helping hurricanes or making creating a situation where hurricanes are stronger and more fearsome than before is something that I think has some credence and some credibility. And I tell you, my naked observation, watching hurricanes for most of my life, and especially after I became a public official and had some responsibility, was in the case of some of the hurricanes that have taken place most recently, you see them go from being a Category 1 hurricane, which is on the low end, to a Category 5 hurricane, which is on the high end, sometimes just in a period of hours, as soon as they get into the warmer waters of the Gulf of Mexico, which I think is an issue about how global warming and how these sorts of issues are in fact affecting the weather system. I, you know, like a lot of folks, until I listened to a very detailed presentation about 8 or 9 years ago on this, I didn't quite clearly get the connection. But I listened to a panel of scientists who talked about how simply a reduction in a percent in a degree or two of temperature of water, water being 1 or 2 degrees warmer than it customarily has been, can have a dramatic effect on the intensity of storms and thunderstorms and hurricanes and weather situations. So it's not something that ought to be, sometimes when people raise that issue, some people want to clearly dismiss it, but I think the caller, you know, is making a point that needs much more focus given what we're faced with in this country.
Let's talk with someone else in Champaign County, line one. Hello.
Yeah, and not to mention sea level rise, too. So
right.
It'll add to the problem as well. When you were going off of the idea that everyone should feel a commonality and solidarity because, of, you know, there's the self-interest involved in the disaster, the big one in L.A., well, if the Midwest has its big one, you know, a lot of the buildings in St. Louis could drop into the limestone caverns, and there will be real chaos here too. So I think that that's kind of a selfish reason for solidarity, I guess, and that could happen almost any time, really. So, but I wanted to get back when you were talking about laying blame in FEMA. There's an aspect of the cronyism in the Bush administration that is not too much commented on. We know about Brownie, but some of the other people that were put into FEMA were more political operatives, and if you look at what they did in response to a hurricane that hit Florida, I mean, the St. Petersburg Times has done an expose of how much money was just dumped in willy-nilly into Florida, and it just happened to be just before election. I don't know if you're counting that as part of the regional dimension of things, but clearly, that was part of what was involved there. And I think the St. Petersburg Times has done that on a regional level, and Democracy Now! Has had some interviews with people in the past that are archived about that. I haven't seen that it's actually been discussed much. The cronyism is commented on, but there was actually an electoral dimension to it as well. And I don't know if you want to respond to that, but the kind of community organizations that are going on in New Orleans to try to have the poor people and community groups to have some impact on what the city fathers, and most of them are fathers, I guess, are planning. I wondered whether you could elaborate on that a bit, and I'll just hang up and listen. Thanks.
I want to say this. I when I testified before Congress right after Katrina, I suggested that the Congress needed to statutorily mandate the minimum qualifications for the director of FEMA and their top-level deputies, that even if it's a presidential appointment, like we would never hire an engineer to be Surgeon General. We would never hire a non-lawyer to be Attorney General. Therefore, we should never tolerate a non-expert in emergency preparedness being the head of FEMA. And I think Congress can step in and say, hey, we're going to put in the law what these minimum requirements are, and that in and of itself is going to ensure that at least in the leadership, there isn't going to be the kind of cronyism. The other thing is that I think what you see not only with FEMA but perhaps with Army Corps is I would think that with FEMA, with emergency preparedness, and given the fact that there's such great risk, that even an independent oversight panel might be somewhat helpful to ensure that after an emergency event happens, whether it's in Florida or Louisiana, that there's some sort of post-mortem on how the money was spent, on who it was spent with, on how it was done. I think that that could be, I mean, I don't think that that's difficult to put in place, but I think, you know, the true thing about what occurred here is that you've got to, this, and I learned this from being mayor of New Orleans, and no mayor of New Orleans should be mayor of New Orleans without going through extensive briefings and teachings about how water and hurricanes operate, is that it is a highly technical, sophisticated science, this idea of emergency preparedness and response. It's not, you know, it's not the old, just not just the old civil defense director. It's much, much more, especially in the post 9/11 world and now in the post Katrina world.
Do you think that the current mayor, Mr. Nagin, had the appropriate background and the experiences to deal with this?
I don't, you know, honestly, I don't think so. I mean, I think that the what you saw and what you've seen is that the performance, his performance was woefully inadequate rather. And it's easy to point the finger all over the place, but when you're the mayor, you're in charge of coordinating the response, of communicating to the people, of making sure that the resources that you have indeed are maximized.
Let's talk again with another caller. Crystal Lake, line number 3.
Hello. Yeah, I agree that global warming and petrochemical pollution are the big problems, but also I don't even know if putting in levees there is going to help, because like the Mississippi, they've tampered with the runoff, which has increased in some years, and I just wondered if they did put in levees, I don't know if it's getting so under, you know, below sea level, might say, whether it pays to do it, to rebuild the cities there, to rebuild cities that are practically underwater. But if they do, what is the best material for that? And if they are rebuilding levees, which I know they are they using the right material?
I guess that goes to the issue, and I know that's also something that you've talked about, whether the appropriate level of technical expertise is there, whether we have it. I think you would say, yes, we do. Whether it's there, whether it's really being brought to bear on this problem.
Well, you know, it goes beyond levees. It really is a comprehensive flood control system, which for southeastern Louisiana includes a coastal restoration initiative, includes newer and better levees. And I'd say this about levees. There were four, I believe, 4 levee breaks in New Orleans. The levees that broke, and this is a critical point, were not levees that were levees on natural bodies of water, like the lake or the Mississippi River. There were smaller levees, flood walls, if you will, that were along these man-made canals, some of which were less than 50 feet wide. And one has to believe that had those levees been built in the same way as the Mississippi River levees were built, that there would not have been a breakage. Have they been more substantial and the like? But for the levee breaks, New Orleans would have had modest flooding at best, nothing of the sort. Mississippi Gulf Coast took the brunt of the hurricane and suffered a lot of wind and water damage. But, I mean, you got to keep in mind that the Dutch, for example, and the U.S. Senator Mary Landrieu just led a delegation over there to look at their systems, have pioneered in a much more sophisticated system to protect themselves when the entire country, as I understand, sits below sea level. So this is something that a nation that I believe that builds stealth fighters, rebuilds Baghdad, Kosovo, Western Europe, a nation that is launching now a space capsule to Pluto. If we've got that engineering prowess, then certainly we've got the prowess and the ability to be able to build a flood control, a water management system to help out our own people. And I think the engineering community, certainly, if challenged and tested, I'm certain can do what it has to do in order to do this and to design a system. And I do believe that it's important that it be designed. And I'm going to make a final point, and that is one could say, well, why should we build cities that are underwater or, quote-unquote, below sea level? And one might ask, well, why should we build cities that are along the San Andreas Fault? Or why should we build cities that are along coastal North Carolina, South Carolina, or Florida when they, too, could be? I mean, the fact of the matter is that we like, as people, to live near water. It's been the source of life, and we like to live in areas where there are certain risks, and it's difficult to find parts of the country for which there's no risks of some sort of natural disaster.
We are going to have to leave it there because we're
running out of time. I appreciate you, and I am looking forward to being in Champaign-Urbana tomorrow at the university, and I certainly look forward to coming out and being with Tracy Parsons, the head of the Champaign County Urban League, and his supporters and colleagues. And this has been a great discussion, and I look forward to continuing it tomorrow.
Well, I appreciate your time. And for people who are here in and around Champaign-Urbana, our guest for this hour, Focus 580, Mark Morial, he is the president and CEO of the National Urban League, will be here visiting the U of I campus. He'll be giving a talk tomorrow night at 7 in Smith Hall on the campus on Matthews. It's free and open to the public. It's sponsored by a wide range of units on the campus, as well as community organizations, including the Champaign County Urban League. If you'd like to learn more, by the way, about the activities of the Urban League and you have internet access, you can go to their website, which is www.nul.org. And again, Mr. Morial, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day.